So before we get started, I want to thank everyone who has been coming on the journey with us through the Enneagram Panels podcast as we go into this season, which is all about relationships. But we are changing the name, and you're going to see a new logo up there. The name is now The Art of Growth, and that's because we're wanting to do some more holistic approaches to some of the material we want to cover. And we have a new hub that's www.theartofgrowth.org. And you can go there and we'll have some additional content. You can sign up our email list. And we have an online class that'll be coming later this year, as well as ways to reach us. So today, though, The Art of Growth is having a panel of sevens talking about relationships. And I am Jim Zartman, and I am here with Joel Hubbard.
I think I know a little bit about sevens.
Being one.
Wow, this was really good, too. This panel was amazing. And it was a wide range between the youngest and the oldest.
Yeah.
There was so much energy in this space. And just to give you an orientation, for those of you who are fairly new to the Enneagram, there are nine types in the Enneagram model, and the seven is located in the triad called the head triad. So there are three triads. There's the head, the heart, and the body. And these are preferences. They're not just, this is, you know, you're only a head type, but these are preferences where we find ourselves leaning far more into the headspace as sevens than we would in, say, the heart or the emotions or the body, which is primarily driven by action.
I loved how you put it in one of our online classes where you mentioned that we all have pieces of the pie. There's just we have a bigger slice of the pie when it comes to our type. I thought that was a really helpful way to look at it.
And for the seven, the bigger piece of the pie would be, you know, our head, our rationality, are going to that headspace. And for the heart-centered people, it would be, you know, the larger piece of it would be the emotions. And that's how they process the world around them, is through that center, much more than through the head and the body. And so if you're thinking about that in terms of triads, you've got the head center, which is the five, the six, and the seven. And the seven being what's oftentimes called the enthusiast or the epicure. And this type tends towards rationality, but that doesn't mean that sevens are all rational, because there's definitely things we do that are very irrational.
Yeah, no one is pure rational. That's completely an illusion.
No.
Those who think they're being pure rational,
it's
a preference, but they cannot fully live in it. So yeah,
yeah, and it's the way we even rationalize our irrationality. It's still all in the head. You know,
oh, that's a good one.
And we've got plenty of skill at that. I rationalize my pleasures, my escapes, my running, you know. And so what you'll hear here in this particular podcast is sevens definitely tend towards avoidance of negativity of all sorts, particularly that which feels to us like it's going to trap us, it's going to hold us, it's going to be something that confines us or deprives us in some way. Those are key words for sevens that create all kinds of reaction within us. Anything that has to do with confinement, deprivation, sitting still, not being able to move around. So sevens are very motion oriented, but that's all driven by this need to be seeking for pleasure, for fun, for interesting things as a way to keep from the negativity that sometimes creeps up on us. And so that's what you're going to hear in this panel.
Yeah. And like we said in the last episode, we had certain expectations going into this. We had certain kinds of questions we thought we wanted to ask. And we knew a lot of different people had different opinions about how to approach this. But we really had to come back to the self-referencing tradition of the Enneagram. We had to come back to letting the type speak for itself. Being the only non-seven in this episode, needing to pull back my energy, just really let the seven energy take over the room. Let there be acceptance of the type. You know, because I loved how transparent some of the statements were. They were very self-effacing, or like, isn't this like, I just realized this terrible thing about myself. But
yeah,
it spoken into a place of complete safety and complete freedom, because that's what we wanted it to be. You know, we really want this season to be about acceptance. And so I liked those moments where people would say something, you know, even laughing at, you know, what they would maybe want to hide in another place or on a different day or in a different conversation, and just letting that out there. And so as you're listening, I would just ask you to come from that same place of acceptance, of just openness towards hearing these people who may have a totally different experience of life than you, totally see things differently. And sometimes we look someone else's brokenness, and we all have our own stuff. And but if you cringe the most at it, you might be a seven. I don't know. Yeah. Who knows?
Or married to one or something. Like,
yeah. But yeah, these are incredible women. This was actually a panel of all women, but just incredible, incredible wisdom. So thank you so much to our panelists who are willing to come out and be with us on this and enjoy listening to these wonderful, wonderful women.
Well, welcome to the Seven panel, and I'm so happy to have with us Eileen, Kate, and Laura. So tell us a little bit about yourselves.
I'm Eileen, and I'm married to Joe, who just turned a year older yesterday, and I have three kids who make up our squad, Melissa, Eric, and Amory, all in their 20s. I have no teenagers. It's good life. for work, I actually work with teams and team leaders in the drug development space, work for myself, and I have my happy place also, and it's actually work. Love what I do and feel like I get to use my strengths every day, which is pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yep.
I'm Kate. I'm also dating a Joe who turns a year older tomorrow.
Wow. Okay.
I am from Portland, Oregon. I've been living on the East Coast for about 6 years now, and I work at a bookstore, which is my happy place. I really love talking and thinking about books all the time, and I live with some roommates here in the city. It's really fun.
I'm jealous. I'm Laura. I have one daughter. I'm not dating a Joe or married to a Joe or married at all. I have one daughter. She is 10. I, for work, used to be in marketing for 15 years, and now I work for myself. I teach yoga-based retreats and workshops all over the country. I'm writing my first book, about to be done with that in a couple weeks.
Great.
And yeah, so I think those are the important things.
Cool. Thank you. So I'm going to give a brief description of the type seven. The literature describes the seven as an enthusiast or an epicure. They are the type to want to keep themselves nurtured, entertained, happy, interested, optimistic. And this means that they oftentimes avoid limits or feeling confined. They often avoid the darker emotions, because it can also feel very confining to be trapped by those darker emotions. So now that's the description, but that's also my take also as a type seven. And I'd love to hear from you guys if you would add to that, if you would comment on that.
For sure. I had an instance last night where it wasn't an instance. I had plans last night. And this is what happens to me almost always when I make plans, is I'm very hesitant to make them anyway, because I never know if I'm going to actually want to do them when the time comes. And I hate that feeling of being stuck doing them. But I decided to keep the plans and had a great time, went to a show, music, you know, live music, which I love. Then this morning, it was with a longtime friend, and this morning we were chatting about what we were going to be doing here. And I bounced some of the questions off of her, because she's known me for 20 years. And the first thing that came up was, yeah, you're the worst to make plans with, because I feel like I have to pin you down. Mm-hmm. And it's always been like that. And I said, I know I'm getting better. I'm trying to get better about that. But it's a real, I know how frustrating that is for people, but it's also a real thing of just hating to be locked into something, no matter what it is. Mm. Relationships, it can lead to a lot of like a lot of resentment for people, because who wants to feel like that?
Yeah.
That you don't, you know, it's not personal either. It's just this like, oh, I can't. Like for me, seeing a calendar full of things makes me feel crazy. Mm. I do everything I can to have a clear day.
Mm. A quick thought about that. It's interesting how some of the literature says type sevens like to have a full calendar. In fact, yes. Some of them actually say this on podcast. Oh, sevens all love to have a full calendar. There's a variety of us out there. And there's some who do love to have a full calendar. But what's functioning underneath that is the same issue of either wanting to keep ourselves buoyed and optimistic and upbeat, and that can be the calendar thing. But there's also, for a lot of us, that idea of being trapped by the calendar
yeah.
is very unnerving. So I see yeah, you guys
that
nodding
is
your
interesting.
Heads as well.
I've heard that the whole I want to have a full calendar thing, and that, and I get that it swings both ways.
Mm.
Like it could swing both ways, that desire for constant entertainment. I used to be that way. And as I've gotten older or whatever, or I get hopefully got more healthy, it's swung in the complete opposite. Mm. I want like zero plans, no expectations of me.
Yeah.
So that's so interesting, because I think that's a new insight for me. I just had an aha moment because I never really thought about that. But even this morning, I said to my husband, I wish I didn't commit to come to this. I wanted to hang out of my house, maybe read my book, you know. So I feel similarly, because he says, you do that all the time. You commit to things and then you never, ever, ever want to go. And I do. Mm-hmm. So I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I never thought about it. But I do. I commit and I say yes, probably because I'm afraid to say no. Not to this. Like, I really do want to do it. I just didn't want to leave my house. Mm-hmm. But I never kind of named it as I don't want to be trapped. Yeah. So I'm going to have to think about that.
That's interesting. I am so different than this. I'm one of the fill your calendar types to like a compulsive degree. But I find that sense of not wanting to be trapped coming from like other areas of my life. Mm-hmm. I see this with friendships interest. I know that sounds weird, but I love having good friends, and I do not like having like best friends. Like, some people really love having like one or two very close relationships. And when a friendship starts approaching like kind of a clingy nature, or we want to spend all our time together, I put people at like an arm's length, because I want to have space for like all of the friends I'd like to have rather than like confining myself to this like one or two friendships. But when it comes to my calendar, like sign me up for all the things I don't have time for. And idleness makes me like very, very antsy.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to what Joel was saying, that idea of like sinking into your thoughts, like not that there's some dark thing waiting for me down there. Maybe there is. But like the idea of wanting to be occupied all the time and keeping things moving, I find really compelling. Yeah.
Well, that's the paradox, isn't it? Because, for all of us sevens, I think we would say that's the type of paradox we live in, is on one hand, idleness. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to do anything. And then when the nothing comes, it's like, we fill it.
What
we
am I going to do?
Exactly. Like, what am I going to do? And that is, so we'll find a way to fill that. There's this like this avoidance of boredom, because being bored is really a terrible thing, you know. And
that's a bad place for me.
Yeah.
It's a bad place for me to be bored.
Yeah.
I don't understand boredom. Like, I don't feel bored. So what is that? Because I know a lot of sevens say that. But I can't remember the last time I felt bored.
Mm.
So maybe I'm working really hard not to be bored. I don't know. Mm. That's just an interesting thing that I've never really identified with.
That's good. Yeah,
that's a
let's
good
hear
question.
More about that.
That's a good question. Like, I consider being bored having nothing meaningful to do. Like, not able to make progress on something.
Yeah.
Even if it's
yes,
even if it's
absolutely.
Reading a book. Like, okay, I'm going to make progress on my book. But if I'm sitting around thinking, what should I do?
That's
boredom for me.
Got it.
That's for me it is.
You're nodding your head as well, Kate. You think you
Yeah, I feel the same way, which might be when I first started looking into the Enneagram, I thought I was a 3 because I felt very progress driven. I see the same thing with boredom. It's like I love having time to relax and like have time alone. I tend to be an introvert like that. But the idea of boredom where it's like I don't like know what to do or what to make progress on or like what's coming next feels very like time is being like wasted, which is, I don't want to feel that way, but it is how I am, I guess. Yeah.
And in that way, we do have a similar, there's a bit of a lookalike with a three, with the type three, in that productivity matters to sevens.
Yes. Absolutely. Right?
Would you all say that?
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah. More than I wanted to.
I get along with threes the best because in work situations. Because of that, it's like we're on the same fast pace. We're going. We make decisions. Mm. It moves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and type threes can really help us, and not to get into type threes here because this is about the sevens, but in that, but this is a good contrast because for sevens, we are idea people.
Yeah. And right? They will actually finish the
They're good to have around.
We tend much more towards those, and this is part of the nature of the seven to keep ourselves really interested and to keep ourselves optimistic and upbeat and interested in life is we need ideas. We need something new, something fresh.
A couple of people have said optimism, and I didn't realize until really recently that my optimism can really irritate people.
Oh. Mm.
I thought it was great. I still think it's pretty great. But so my daughter met with Joel, my 20-year-old, and found out that she's an 8. And then, of course, in their conversation, talked about me being a 7. And now she says to me, is that your enthusiast telling me that I look great today, or is it for real? I'm like, wow. Like, how many times has she said, my mom's just saying I look great because she's my mom? So that just started making me think, like, wow, my optimism can come across as not genuine. Yeah. Mm. And it really, I should say most of the time it is. Like, I don't typically say, hey, you look great if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I just learned that recently.
Mm.
That
yeah.
Not everybody loves my optimism.
Not everyone loves optimism, period.
Right.
You know, whether it's real or not, it's just, it feels like a non-reality.
Right. Exactly. They say I'm a realist as if I'm not. Right.
Mm. I've heard that.
Yeah.
You know, but said about me as well. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I know sevens have a tendency to reframe the negative in terms of something positive. And I do that a lot with my optimism. I try to, if my, you know, friend's having a hard time, I'm like, well, what if you looked at it this way? And perhaps sometimes it's comforting, but a lot of times what they want is to commiserate.
Right.
I had a friend who recently went through a breakup, and she's sad that her travel plans over the summer, she now doesn't have a buddy to do them with. And I was like, what a wonderful opportunity to travel alone. I would love to travel alone. And she was like, that sounds like the most miserable thing ever. And I'm like, well, you just got to look at it differently. And I was like, man, like, I shouldn't act like everyone has the same interests as me. But that idea of reframing to like get some like cool opportunity out of it. And not everyone's looking for that in every situation.
Right.
Well, there's the high side to us. When we do that, we're genuinely trying to lift people up because we care. The low side is sometimes we just don't want to be trapped by their negativity either and by their darkness.
Yeah. Right.
Am I right? I mean, that's how I feel anyways. I don't know.
Yeah. Go there for a minute. We're not staying.
We're not staying. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
We're not going to stay there.
Part of growth for us is learning to like spend a little bit more time in that space just because of other people need that. But this goes to the first question I wanted to ask you guys, which is about relationships. What do you bring? We've already started down that path. What do we bring as sevens to relationships?
When I was thinking about this question, you have to define relationship for me. I was telling Joel earlier, I basically have three rings of friends or relationships, I should say. So I consider my immediate family. So the one I grew up in and the one that I have right now, like the inner ring, I think they're really probably the only people in the world that really know me, good, bad, and ugly. And then there's a second ring of my best friend since I was 18, and we're still really close. She probably knows me better than anybody in the world outside of my first ring. And then, you know, I have four or five friends. That's it. And it's funny you say, I say all the time, I don't need new friends. I don't have time for the friends that I have right now. I don't need new friends because everybody else is on the out of the rest of the world is on the outer ring. And I love a lot of people in that ring, but they know nothing about me. So it's different. So when I am in that outer ring, I bring fun because I show up as the happy, go lucky. Nothing is wrong. There is no pain in my life. Life is good, Eileen. That's the outer ring. You know, the inner ring, they get what you see is what you get. And, you know, so my inner ring is very close. That second ring, like even my best friends, there's four total. I don't tell them everything. I tell them what I'm up to. I might tell them what I'm thinking. I never tell them what I feel. Mm. Just don't. I just don't. That's just mine.
That's an excellent. I love how you contextualize that. To me, I'd love to hear from you guys as well, in terms of, like, because I didn't think of that until you said that to me earlier. Is what does it look like in context?
It's different
for you. It's very much about that inner circle where you're totally open, and you can feel you can be real, and then but that second which to many sevens would feel like best friends.
They are
best
friends.
Really
they are
close,
best friends,
isn't that? And is but yeah. yet you know, and then as it goes out to the outer rings, it's even less of that.
Yeah. It takes me courage even to tell my best friend for literally almost 40 years. And I will contextualize it. I'll say, this is really hard for me. And by the way, I'm texting, I'm talking. I'm saying, this is really hard for me, but I'm going to admit something. Send. And then I still have to work. And that's how I commit to saying it. But and that's my best friend in the whole world for almost 40 years.
Wow.
So
that's, yeah.
I really agreed with what you were saying about how the outer circle, the people who don't know you as well, you bring like only positivity. Yeah. I find that my most extroverted, most confident self comes out only with either strangers or people that I'm meeting for the first time and I'm trying to impress in some way, like friends of friends or something like that. But I find that like I don't know if this sounds like a weird humble brag, but I make good first impressions because the first impression of the seven is like really enthusiastic and fun. I love telling stories. I think I bring a lot of storytelling to relationships. Mm. And so it's a lot of, you know, when you meet someone for the first time, I have this repertoire of stories I can just pull from to share. But then, like you said, the people who've known me longer get to see the deeper, like – more, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly, basically. Mm-hmm. But I don't find people who say that they struggle with kind of like being like shy or being like they have to like warm up on first impressions. I can't really relate to that at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So interesting to think about it in this sort of ring way. I would say I used to spend most of my time in that outer ring. Performing, you know, and that comes very like naturally and easy to me to be extroverted and fun and animated. And my friend that I was talking to last night, she's like, you always bring so much humor to every conversation and take people to like a much deeper level than they usually would be willing to go, even just, you know, on all levels, because you're always so engaged in like really deeply engaged in a lot of things. Even if you're just talking about a show that you're watching, it's like, we're going to go into this, you know, we're going to talk about it. It's going to be so exciting. So I used to spend almost all my time there, and there were very, very few people, or really no one for a long time, that knew sort of the, I call it like the last 5% of you.
That's a good way to put it.
You know, what's really going on. And oftentimes it was even hidden from me. Mm. But over time, I got sober 4 years ago, and that just kind of broke everything for me in a bad way, in a very good way, because I had to start really telling the truth about what was going on with me. And so I would say now I almost try not to spend any time out on the outer ring doing what I was doing. I don't mind, like, it's kind of nice to exercise that a little bit, but I have a few people, not a big circle, but a few people on that inner world, and there's a lot less pretending. It's way more introverted. I spend a lot more time alone, and I enjoy that. So as far as what the question is, what do you bring to a relationship? I still think I bring a lot of that fun and new. I've heard throughout my whole life you bring like it's always new. There's just new things going on with you all the time. And it's like no day is ever the same. I had a boyfriend once tell me, like, I will never get bored with you because there's just always so much going on. You're thinking about like a million different things all the time. And it's awesome. But now I can also see that that's really in sometimes that's just a way to not. I've really had to learn how to just stay with the boring and the monotonous and things like that. So it's that flip side of, yeah, I can bring fun. I can bring novelty. I can bring exciting. I can bring like really stimulating conversations and things like that. But as I've grown, I think I've brought a little bit more just hopefully quiet and stability, you know, worked on that.
Mm. So just a thought on that real quick is like the sobriety for you is much more than just about, you know,
not drinking,
yeah. the addiction. It's sobriety in a lot of other ways. It's really remarkable how you're.
Yeah. So there's this great definition I think we talked about that I think is interesting for every seven to hear, because sobriety is the virtue of a seven, or it's like the growth path, right? But it's not about not drinking or what, it's not about an addiction per se, but I heard it described as, or defined as, sobriety as the capacity to savor, which I thought was
really good.
So beautiful and so true for a seven, just to savor, to have something be enough, whatever it is, an experience, a person, a drink, you know, and to be able to savor it and not have to need more.
Mm. That's really, really, really good. This is the whole thing of the seven's tendency towards gluttony and to consuming, but never really digesting or absorbing it. And the savoring is teaching us how to absorb it and actually be satisfied with what we have. Yeah. That's really awesome.
That's huge. Yeah.
That is awesome. I love that definition. And when I started actually reflecting on my gluttony in all areas, I reflected back on parenting. And, you know, my poor children, thank goodness they're growing into great adults, because they grew up with go big or go home.
Yeah.
You know, we are in this, you know. So, and one, you know, and now I think, oh my gosh, what did I do to them? And I'm sure it served them well in some ways, but, and thankfully they're all coming into their own now. But I'll tell you, this is how far it goes. And it's kind of funny. So my boy in the middle is 23 and he has Down syndrome. And he is the healthiest, happiest, biggest gift you could ever imagine. My 20-year-old, this was about 7 years ago. So she was 14 and he was 16, something like that. He's going to a Special Olympics basketball game, right? And Amory shakes him, and we have it on video. It's funny, but it's now it's like, oh my gosh. And she shakes him and she says, "We are Habilos. We don't lose. Don't come home without the trophy." And I'm going, oh my gosh. You know, so we all laugh then. But now I'm thinking about, what did I do to these young people who are now in the world? You know?
Yeah.
But that's, everything was big. If I had a new hobby, I'd go spend $1,000 on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, and then go big or go home is just reality. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
I feel like my gluttony as a seven has caused my parents a lot of strife growing up. Whenever I had the opportunity to travel, or like I had time off from school to do something, you know, I could have, like, you know, I don't know, like gone to Wyoming and worked on like a dude ranch, or I could have done something local. But I always went for like the most like risky, like, so when I was, I just finished my freshman year of college, I decided to, like, for the summer, instead of getting like a nice internship, I would hike the John Muir Trail, which is 200 miles in California, with three of my like girlfriends. And it would take us about a month to do it. And we wouldn't have any cell service. So my parents had to like look at the satellite images every night to make sure that we were like not eaten by bears. And then my junior year of college, I studied abroad in India, and I like didn't prepare enough before I went and was like totally flustered when I got there for like, and realized that I committed to being there for 4 months. I somehow hadn't mentally prepared to be there that long, which was silly. And then I graduated from college and I decided to travel alone to Greece for like 5 weeks. And so like all of these experiences, my parents were like, you could have chosen something small, but you chose the thing that was farthest from us and like the most alone. And they've all caused me a lot of joy. But I think that a lot of my desire to do kind of like risky or solo things is based in that go big or go home attitude. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I wasn't, you know, really passionate about living alone in Greece, but the idea that I could, like, not only do this, but make it harder or make it more challenging was something that drove me to do it for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. Or something like, And this is like a criticism of myself, like the idea that I can, you know, go around and tell people that I did it. It's like this performative nature of the seven to be able to look back and say, like, wow, look at all this cool stuff I did.
We're accumulating stories, aren't we?
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, good life experiences, but also, is there another reason that I'm doing these things? Yeah. Yeah.
Those are great stories. They really brought out a great first impression. I thought it was. But, I mean, I was so entertained by the rabbit trails. I was like, did everyone answer the question?
Nobody answered the question.
Did anyone answer the question?
We still haven't answered the question.
What you bring
we
to
We have to talk more to figure out.
Sorry.
What do you bring to relationships?
So can we systematically go down and say, what do you bring to a relationship?
Oh, sorry.
I think depends. I said novelty, excitement.
Yeah. Okay, so you answered the question and then it sort of went. Oh.
So it depends on my rings, right? It depends on the rings. The outer ring gets fun. The middle ring. One thing I do bring to every relationship is it's service. Like, I want to help you. How can I help you? Wow. What can I do? What can I do for you? So I am always looking for problems to solve with other people, and I make them my own. So I do bring service, I think. I don't know if that's a seven or if that's Eileen, but I kind of bring – I do stuff for people.
But you framed it differently, I was thinking, than the two panel we had earlier where they want to be there for their emotional needs.
Oh, Lord, no.
Them. But you said – because you said I want to serve people.
I want projects.
Give me stuff to do.
How you frame that is give me a problem to solve.
Yes. Yes. Mm. Yeah. And I'll let you know.
I like that, too. Yeah. I do those. I was like – when you said that, I'm like, wow, no. But I don't, it's the emotional part. It's more – but yeah, give me a challenge. Yeah. Give me a fun, creative problem to put my brain on and I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel that way in terms of wanting to give people advice, even if they don't want it or not. I feel that I'm like a good listener when not all the time, but when people are really struggling with something, like something has happened to them, they really need someone to listen to them talk about, vent about something for a long period of time. I think that I'm good at listening in those situations, but when they're done talking, I'm ready to, like, return the advice. And it's hard for me to sit still and not give advice. But I do think I bring, like, a good listening ear to relationships in that. And then I also bring, like you were saying, novelty. Mm-hmm. I never want to go to the same restaurant twice. I always want to travel to a new place. Watching a movie twice seems like the worst way I could spend an evening. So new things I think I definitely bring, too.
Yeah.
Did we answer the question?
That was answering the question.
It was, but it was hilarious.
Yeah, there's a story.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of things we feel like, you know, we bring, but we're not the reason. It's oftentimes difficult for sevens, and really this is for other types that are self-referencing, is our focus tends oftentimes to be on ourselves. Even when we're thinking about the needs of other people, it's still very much that we go in first and figure out what we need, what we think, what we feel, and then provide that as a solution to the world around us. And we're surprised when people don't. This is just like you were saying. You're surprised that people, Eileen. You said surprised that people don't enjoy your optimism quite as much as you do, and because it's what we discern internally is helpful to us, should be helpful to the world around us. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it difficult sometimes to actually answer the question directly, as I know what I bring to people, and this is what they need. But I think you've done a great job so far. It's like definitely novelty, reframing, helping people see things, perspective. Would you say perspective is another thing that you bring?
Mm-hmm.
The ability to see something in a different way that they didn't see before.
It's almost like just to be with someone is like boredom. Like, what are we going to do? What are we going to accomplish? Well, we're just going to be, really? Mm-hmm. That to me is almost like we're not accomplishing anything.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time just sitting with someone. Even if that's what they want or need. Mm. To me, it's just another way of piece of boredom. Mm.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty selfish when I say it out loud. But, you know.
But focusing on the things that we sevens do bring. Okay, so we do bring newness. We do bring a perspective change oftentimes. Another thing that we do bring is vision. We tend towards being big picture, outside the box. Pattern recognizers, we know how things interconnect, and actually we long for that. That's another part of why we immerse ourselves in something new, is because we want to know it from the inside out, and then we want to see how it connects to everything else. And then that's the gift that we can bring to the world. And that's really on our hearts to do. I think we genuinely want to help the world become better and different, you know, and see differently and be better.
To me, there's no problem or issue or even emotional issue that is not that you can't figure out, right? So I'm definitely able to sit with people in a lot of pain or in really difficult situations, and because I know that it's going to be okay. I know, like, and when people truly think they're stuck, you know, when I talk to people who really are stuck, I do it a lot in my work, are stuck in their minds, you know, truly believe they can't get out of a certain way of being or a certain mindset or a certain behavior or even like a relationship or a life circumstance or a job. It's like, there's no way that's true for you, you know? So there's this, I don't know if that's optimism or really just, I feel like I do have this beautiful, like, reverence for the possibility in life, and I believe that's true for everybody.
So you're saying it's not like this ungrounded optimism, like this foolish sort of I see through rose-colored glasses.
No.
It's you're actually saying I'm confident that if we think through this thing, we can solve this problem. We can get through
it. Yeah, I mean, I think at one time and maybe for a long time it was a naive thing because I hadn't experienced enough life yet, but having, you know, gone through a lot of life, and it hasn't darkened that or dampened that. If anything, it's kind of just broadened it and deepened it, this sense that I have for how big the possibility is inside each person. I feel it's more grounded now, and it's not even thinking through a problem. It's just like there's an internal vastness inside of you that's available, you know, so showing people that, if that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
I like that. Even in my work, I know that one of my gifts or styles or strengths that I get to use is helping people see their potential.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is experience, but now I'm at the point where they don't all have to be like Eileen's potential. You know, I see and I help people kind of get unstuck. You know, I'm now much more of a question asker than an advice giver than I was when I was even 10 years younger. So I can help people unpack better than I used to, because I used to tell them what I thought. I feel very similarly that I see potential in people sometimes, but even if I don't see the actual potential, I can help you unpack it. I can help you, you know, just, and I like to do that.
Yeah.
I like to do that.
I'm only 24, and I think that that's something that I strive for and I hope that I will achieve, is that I also feel like I see this great potential. Like when I said that I love like being there and listening to someone, because like listening to someone's hardship, it's like I'm looking for the cracks in it, like where the light can come through, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ways that I know that it's not all despair and that things will turn around. And I similarly have that. Sometimes it feels like blind confidence that like there will come a day when they feel better, the thing, they have moved past this thing. And I'm hoping to develop that ability, like you're saying, to help guide someone to find that potential within themselves, rather than just kind of like hitting them over the head with like, don't you see it? Like it's there. It's been there all along.
Yeah.
But it's a progress to achieve that.
Yeah. So do you mind if I want to share a book, because literally
always talk about books.
I know, me too. So there is one book before the Enneagram that really changed my habit of advice giving into questioning. And it was Change Your Questions, Change Your Life. And I remember reading it and going, I break all the rules in this book, and had to consciously practice asking questions and genuinely curious questions, not leading questions.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And that's something that has literally shifted my whole approach to interacting with people. And that was about 10 years ago.
It's that knowing, though. It's like this I mean, I think this is another sort of thing you can bring to relationships that goes both ways. It's like this – we live in our heads, right? And we're very strong there. Like we know – we believe we know things like, for sure, you know, mm-hmm. And I think that can be good in some ways, and it can be really unhelpful mm-hmm. and sort of mm-hmm. Heavy-handed and kind of one-up position on people mm-hmm. a lot of times.
Mm, yeah. Boy, I could keep drilling down because I'm a seven and I'm with you guys and I'd want to keep going in that space. But we have to move on to the next question, which may be a little bit tougher. We'll see. What do you think you need from the relationships that that you care about?
When I was thinking about this, I felt that the thing that I most heavily draw upon in my relationships, especially in times of need, is like support, someone to give me advice, someone to be that mirror and see the potential in myself. Because while I can see it in other people all the time, you know, you will get through this thing, things will turn around for you, I fail to follow my own advice. Mm-hmm. And I'm always seeking out people who can listen and provide that for me. I think this also, though, plays into the idea that I don't like being alone with my negative emotions. And so having companionship or friendship or my parents to talk through things that I'm struggling with is very important. If I felt like I couldn't be vulnerable and share with the people who were closest to me, it would feel like I wasn't being fulfilled by those relationships, because that's something I struggle so much to find internally.
I mean, this sounds cliche, but it's true. Like a lot of freedom, a lot of I need a lot of space and leeway to not to act out or to be selfish or whatever, but to not take that part of my nature personally. So space to...
In other words, don't be offended by my need for space.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, yeah. So allowance for independence. I need to be able to be independent. That said, I also need a container to hold the darker spaces and to allow those to just to be, to exist. And there needs to be a lot of, like, patience and space around, you know. It feels like this – I just keep feeling like such a self-assured. It's like everything needs to be on my terms. Like, I'll share when I'm ready. I'll go there when I'm ready. I'll – you know, I keep feeling like, God, it must be frustrating to be in a relationship with me of any kind.
Do you ever feel like – so this is –
truly.
No, I love it. I love your honesty about that. Do you feel like – because this is where it's – the analogy that always comes to my mind is that of a cat and a dog. Mm. We've been described as being like golden retrievers, like dogs. Yeah.
Excited.
Right. Yeah. Excited, happy. There's parts of it that we go, yeah, I relate to some of that, right? But then there's this other part you're describing that's much more like a cat.
Yes. Well,
it's on your terms.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if you're going to ask me if it has to do with more of the inner world – the vulnerable spaces.
I need to be coming to
you. Oh, man, I need to be the one coming to you. Don't come chasing that stuff or try to pull it out of me.
Don't try to squeeze me too tight or I'm going to run off.
Right.
I'm going to freak out and scratch you. Yeah. I always said it's like I need to know that the gate is open and then I'll stay in the yard.
Ooh.
That's so cool. Wow.
I love that.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I'm going to use that. That's really good.
Like if you want to be in a relationship with a seven, you got to be able to leave the gate open and be comfortable with that.
And we probably will
stay. Yeah.
We probably will stay, mm-hmm. right? Because, yeah, so it's the idea of like trapped that then we seek a way out. But if it's open, you know.
Yeah.
We'll go and we'll come back. Eileen, you're thinking deeply about this.
I don't have any cat, I don't think.
No.
I really don't. I don't think I do.
Different instinct. Then.
Yeah, I'm going to have to think about it. I am thinking because there's a few things running through my mind. So one of them is I think what I need most is just to know that who's ever with me is in my corner and not judging.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one thing I definitely need to know is that you're in my corner. And even if you don't agree with me, you're still on my team, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's for every ring of my little ring analogy. Then there was another thought when you were talking about the cat. I'm like, I don't have any. The other thing I know I need, and this is honestly, this could be just a Joe and Eileen relationship thing, but my husband 1,000% protects me from myself. He protects me from myself in a lot of ways. So when I go glutton, he protects me. He sometimes he'll stop me. Sometimes he'll pick me up off the ground. Like, he just protects me from myself by asking questions. However, I always know he's on my side and not judging. It was a really hard question to answer.
It is.
A really difficult question for me to answer. Mm. Like, what do I need? I'll let you go. And it might come back to me. Something else just kind of flashed when you were talking about kind of the gate open. Oh, I know what it is. Like, don't tell me how I should do something, because I'm not going to do it that way, even if it's the best way. Do not tell me. It's like one of my favorite sayings is, you are not the boss of me. And I will say it to anybody in the world. Like, don't tell me what to do. Do not tell me what to do or how to do it, because that just gets right under my skin.
Yeah.
Because, and I won't do it. And how stupid is that? Even if it's the best idea in the world. Nope. Not doing
it. I feel that way even superficially with when people recommend like movies and TV shows that I have to see.
The worst.
And they're like, you're going to watch this and you're going to love it. Like, you have you seen it yet? Have you seen it yet?
Music.
And like,
yeah.
I just,
it.
And then if I watch it, I can't like it because someone told me to like it. Gosh.
That is awesome.
Is it?
You know, I think it's awesome because
says
it's so much
the
like the seven. It's so true.
What is that, though?
What is it with it? That's what I'm like with you. Like, what is that that's happening to us that we. I feel the same way about a lot of things, whether it's a movie, music, or
maybe it's
or
that you didn't
being
find
told what to
it
do.
Yourself. It's like you didn't get to discover it, and so
and we that's a
and
huge
we pride
thing for
ourselves
us
on
is
that.
Discovery. Sure, coming up with the something different, something new.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, and the paradox is that I am totally the person to find something I love and then shove it upon everyone.
Isn't that true?
They asked Jim what I did when I walked in this earlier. I was like, here's my phone. Listen to this song now. if someone did that to me, I would be so irritated.
I wonder if that's the cat, because I don't have any of that either.
Mm.
I don't know.
What I'm being okay. told? What part
you can tell me what movies to watch and what music to listen to, and I'll listen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's
humility.
Well, I
think they have some recommendations for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's having humility. Like, there's not a whole lot of humility.
Yeah,
right. Often.
Well, for you, Eileen, in the sense that it's not that there's a universality to this thing. Like,
there
are some things that people do tell me that I go, oh yeah, oh for sure, I'll take that, and I don't mind them telling me that, and actually I kind of seek it out. I don't mind that, but in a lot of other areas, there's that rebel part of the seven. And so would you
the rebel part.
You have the rebel part.
Yeah.
So
that's just one example of something.
It's just the way it expresses itself. And this is what's really great is that you don't have all the expressions. That's so important for what we do here in, you know, in our podcast is we really want people to understand that the expression of the type is different from one person to the next. And that's the wonderful thing about the Enneagram. You're not a box. We don't want to create a box for anyone.
Right.
But there are remarkable similarities, or at least what's functioning underneath is similar from one to another. Is this need to be different? This need to not be a cookie cutter,
not be told
that's
what to do.
That's true.
Not
that's
be
very good.
Yeah.
I
yeah,
always wanted to be different. I wanted to be left-handed. I wanted to when I was a kid. Wanted to be left-handed. Wore number 13 because nobody else wanted it because it was scary. I'm like, okay. So just wanted to be different.
Yeah.
I definitely have that.
Yeah. The worst thing would be to be unoriginal or boring.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh boy.
Yeah. That's for sure.
We are really different, but one thing I'll say, like, I feel like I could hang out with these guys. Like, pretty immediately, I'm like, oh yeah, we can hang out.
I think all seven say
we can
that.
Have coffee.
We like each other.
Yeah, we do like each other.
It's like, oh, you get, oh, cool, we can do this? Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what do others find confusing about you?
I took this as what do others find frustrating about me?
We can work with that.
Whatever that's worth. Because I don't know that it's I guess it could be confusing at first and then it just turns into a frustration, but sort of a flightiness or a flakiness about what I'm doing and what my plans are and not really knowing if they're going to count on me. I've over the course of my life switched friends a lot and just changed my mind a lot all the time, all day. I think it's confusing about like what, because when I'm talking to you and I'm into it, I'm like really into it, you know, but that doesn't mean that an hour later I'm going to be talking to Jim and be so interested in that and have completely forgotten about that conversation. And I think that can come off as like being disingenuous or flaky to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how could you have that many interests? How could you have, you know, or feel like they don't really know you because there's so much going on all the time? Learning things about you through others or just...
Oh, I was going to say that, yeah.
Learning things yeah. about you that they didn't know and feeling a little betrayed by that, you know? Like how...
Well, and I think you've expressed it excellently because that's a huge confusion that shows up, at least for me in my relationships, is that you said this to one person and then this other person, you said something else. So my wife will say to me, I learn more about you from what I hear from other people. And then in terms of decision-making on a team, I can be both frustrating and confusing because if I learn some new information, right, you're nodding your head, Eileen, right? I
mean, change like, your mind and tell somebody.
Flexible. Yeah.
The flexibility, like, yeah. the, you know, it depends. Does it make sense? I mean, right? Because we seek that which makes the most sense and that which kind of connects all the dots and
So I'm not going to answer the question. I'm sorry. I have one little tangent on that because I think I hold back talking. So even at work in my business, I hold back telling other people what I think about somebody else because I think people hold on to my word too long and I could change my mind tomorrow. Right. So I'm going to tell you, I am irritated with Joe today and I'm only going to tell you that if I am sure that you're going to let that go because I'm going to let it go. So that's one reason I don't tell people what I think of other people often or what I think because I'm not confident that they're going to let it go like I would. Mm. I don't because I do. Gone. I'll be irritated and then 30 minutes later, gone.
Yeah, don't hold on to things for very long.
Mm-mm.
That's such good self-restraint, though. I don't hold on for things very long either, but the second I think it, I just, like, say it.
Yeah. And then if I was going to say, that just sounds like maturity to me.
Yeah.
It could be. It could be. I'm more than twice her age, so I've had time. Maybe it is. I don't know.
No, that don't hold on to much for very long at all. There are no grudges or
– Yeah, not very many. Very
so true. I think that can be confusing, too, because you can be very, like, I can go one on something really quick, you know, and snap and be very righteous about what I think. And then an hour later, I don't care anymore. Mm. It's over. Oh,
that's so true.
Yeah.
I'll move on to the next thing. Heated about something. And then a week later, they're like, yeah, are you doing okay with that thing you're so mad about? And I was like, I was really mad about that, wasn't I?
That's so interesting.
Yeah
that was like 47 chapters ago.
I think one thing that people find confusing and or frustrating about me, kind of a different tangent, is that I'm incredibly non-confrontational. Mm. If I'm upset about a person, I will not say anything. If I'm upset about, you know, a general thing in the news or a system of some sort, like how much my rent is, I will be open about that. But if I have to confront a person about something they've done wrong to me, I cannot bring myself to say anything. Mm-hmm. And it's very confusing because since I kind of exude this mask of like everything's chipper, especially to people who don't know me very well, it becomes very difficult to decipher whether or not I'm okay with what people are doing, whether or not, you know, I'm rolling with the punches because there's so much simmering that I won't tell people about. And then it comes out in other areas of my life. Like I complain to my friend about something that so-and-so did and it just makes it really messy when I could just – either what you're saying is, you know – let it sit, don't tell anyone, and then it'll dissipate. Yeah. But yeah, the non-confrontational thing is hard.
I think that's I don't know if that's a seven thing, but it's something that's a huge theme in my life, too, and I would say has been like a major part of growth. And I could imagine it would be a seven thing because you want things to be good. You want things to be positive. You want things to be – you want things to just work, right, and be – and like to keep moving and believe it's all good between people and that people are generally good. But it's caused a lot of dishonesty over time in relationships because I will refuse to have confrontation or even admit that I am angry at someone or don't like what they're doing. And over time, that builds a fundamental dishonesty in the relationship because you're not on ground zero anymore. They don't know – they don't know how you feel. You don't know how they feel. And you're faking it basically until you snap. Mm-hmm. And then it's like blow people out of your life completely. That had been my pattern. Mm. And that is very jarring for people. Yeah. It's like, oh, I thought we were on a completely different page.
Mm. Well, it's the ugly that they don't usually time. It's the ugly they don't usually see.
They don't usually see that. Mm-hmm. No. And then but inevitably you're growing more resentful. Yeah. They're continuing to be disillusioned about who you actually are, how you feel, and then it will reach a point where you snap. And that side is very confusing for people to see, you know. But so I guess it's kind of like, for me, it's being able to sit and really ask myself how I feel and admit that things aren't great when they're not great. Admit I don't like something if I don't like something, you know. Mm-hmm. And have that be okay, not like taking that harsh critic, looking that as a criticism on myself. Mm.
I think I fear the, you know, things have to get worse before they get better. So if I confront someone about something, we now have to have a tense discussion or argument to resolve it. And I don't want to sink down to that hard conversation. I will just glaze across the surface until I forget about it, hopefully.
That's really – thank you. That's very insightful for me because I think of it that – I never thought of it in that those terms, but – that you're right. That visitation of that space down below is
terrifying.
It's a terrifying thing. You feel that. I feel like I'm going to get stuck there for too long. Like oh God, I'm going down here. And so I'd like to skip past that and get back up to climbing up to.
I don't even feel like I'll get stuck there. I feel like it will kill me. No, I'm serious. I have felt like that before. Like, I can't go there. It's too, I don't know what will happen if I go there, And I think over time you realize that there's nothing, it's okay. Nothing's going to happen to you if you go there. It's quite necessary. Yeah. It's not as scary as you think. But I mean, that's why it's interesting to me to be in relationship with eights or people that are more confrontational because they don't view that as they like going there. There's nothing wrong with it. If they quite enjoy it.
And people still like them.
And people love them.
People still are in relationship with them.
Right. Yeah. And so I think it's a interesting shadow sort of work that for a seven, I think.
I remember the first time I told my wife what seemed to me like was going to be the most incredibly difficult news to tell her. And I said, this was a bunch of years back. I said, you know, I don't think our relationship is doing really well. And I said it with all this ugliness that was emerging out of me. And when I said it, she looked up and was like, well, thank you for finally acknowledging it. Like, it wasn't anything that was shocking to her or devastating to her or life-altering for her. When I thought it would, I thought it was like the responsibility that sometimes we feel like we carry is like
the self-importance,
everything, the self-importance. And I got to carry this. I'm going to, you know, keep everybody.
If I'm not holding it up, it's all going to fall.
Yeah, yeah,
it's true.
Yeah,
I think people are confused when they find out I actually have dark days.
Oh.
Like you do, you know, not many. Of course, but I think people are confused when they find out I actually do admit dark days, and they're also surprised when they find out I don't have full confidence in something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were nervous, you know, because again, especially that outer circle, they don't see dark girl and they don't see scared girl. The inner circle, you know, my family, yes, but. They don't see it. So when I say, oh yeah, I had a terrible day and it was this, and I was, and they're thinking, what?
Mm.
So that confuses people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait a minute, you're not showing me that.
Right.
Mm.
So they don't believe
it. Very good actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think acting at confidence is a big, very confusing in my life, how I will act like I am, you know, very sure of myself. And then when I admit that I think that I've, you know, done a poor job or that I don't think that I'm, you know, good enough to do something, people seem shocked. Like, oh, you seem so confident about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a big paradox.
Yeah. In what ways do you feel misunderstood?
Well, I think that
it ties to this confusion thing. So feel
yeah,
free
I think a lot of the behaviors that do look selfish aren't. They aren't coming from a genuine, you know, a selfish place. It's almost a self-preservation or a – it's just the water we're swimming in. It's like there's no intent to just take from people or to not see people, meet them where they are, to not want to be with people. So that can hurt. That can be hard to swallow.
Yeah.
Although I understand it. Mm-hmm. It can be hard to swallow because there is – so much good intention and so much love and you know, compassion and all those things.
Yeah.
And I think misunderstood is also like that we are the way that we act all the time. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of sadness and darkness and mm-hmm. underneath there. I don't think I have I'm so misunderstood that way anymore because I let that stuff out. But I remember a man I dated telling me after he knew me for a long time saying, "You have the sunny disposition and you're one of the darkest people I've ever met." And I wouldn't have known that for years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Similar to what you just said, when people think that my optimism and my confidence can't possibly be real. And it really is. Like, I don't fake, again, at my age, you know, I'm done faking confident and I'm done faking optimism. Like, so when I'm optimistic now and when I'm confident, when I'm not nervous, it's really true. But people who aren't naturally like that, or, you know, sometimes they think there is no way she's that happy. There is no way she's that competent. There is no way she's that optimistic. But I am. Or at least I believe I am, right? So it's not faking it. It could be deeper down, you know, something else.
Well, it's not the only thing you are or is confident and optimistic, but that's real.
Right. It's
real. There's an element of it that's real.
Yeah, it's real. I'm not faking it. I'm not being Pollyanna. And that's what I say to my daughter now. This is not Pollyanna, Mama. This is real. You know, that was phenomenal. So I feel like, you know, so I feel like I'm misunderstood sometimes that can't be real. And it is.
I feel like this is a hard question for you to answer. We were talking earlier about like flightiness, about flitting between different things you're interested in, et cetera, et cetera. And since I'm always trying to maintain more friendships than is possible for me to maintain out of this desire to have tons of options and also because I genuinely care and am interested in all sorts of different people. I mean, you talked about these circles of friendship. I have groups of people I know from all sorts of, you know, things in my life, from home, from school, from work, from sports. And I then tend to be a poor communicator because I've spread myself too thin between all of these people. And especially like the bane of my existence is text messaging and email. It completely overwhelms me. And someone will say like, "I haven't talked to you in weeks." Like, and they could be like my best friend in the world. And I won't respond for like 10 to 14 days. And it is not because I don't care about them. It's because I just like have my hands in like too many cookie jars or and then when I do get back to them, I'm like, "I'm so sorry. Like, let's find a time to talk." I worry also that it's this like disingenuous like attempt at, you know, oh yeah, I care about this. But really I do. I just have a hard time balancing like this like juggling act of friendship and connection I have across the different spheres of my life. Despite that, I feel deeply about all these people.
Mm. Maybe this is me. So I'd love to hear your feedback on this. But I feel like people misunderstand sometimes. And this has been true in my marriage. This has been true in conversations I've had with lots of people where because I'm interested in a lot of different ideas, a lot of different things, I will take on an idea and I will wear it. It becomes my outfit. And I'm in it, thinking about it, talking about it. I'm even living it out. And people sometimes you see that as, oh, is this the new thing we're doing? Is this the direction you're going in? Is this, you know, and they believe that with all my confidence that I have completely changed everything about who I am to become this thing or to do this thing. And what I wish they understood was that I actually need to do that. Give me the space to do that. I'm going to come back, but give me the space. So I love the gate analogy for a lot of different reasons, but give me the space to actually explore this, to try this on. And don't worry, I'm not going to like upheave everything. Yeah. I just need to explore this and be in that space for a little while.
I think that sounds exactly like what you're saying. She's saying with friendships, what I've said with things you changing my mind about things all the time. So no, I don't think that's just you. I think it's not a lot of people think, how could you hold all those things in your mind or be interested in all those things at the same time or those all those people I wanted and or I don't know why that's true, but it is true. And it's a fast switching sort of, I think there's beauty in it. And yes, we want to be able to stretch into those. And I think it's also something you have to really be on to yourself about is why you're continually seeking new. Mm. It's a strength, and it also can handicap you.
Let me ask you guys a question, though. This is what we get from a lot of the stereotyping that's out there in terms of sevens, is that we're superficial people, that we are we're really not deep. We like to skim the surface of things and just happy, 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 laugh, 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 play, play, play. How would you respond to that? Because that seems to be, that for me is a place of confusion as well. And that's what people see, but certainly not what's going on for us.
That's never been true for me. That's why I originally didn't identify with this. I didn't believe I was a seven. Mm. I've always been attracted to the dark music, the dark movies, the dark books, and not just like reading about things or learning about them or going there. But I always wanted to have the real conversation with people. Like I remember just eavesdropping on my parents' conversations late at night, you know, sitting up on the stairs, because I really wanted to know what it was really happening with people. And I wanted to know like the deeper places, not what was presented all the time. I think there is a difference between thinking about those things and knowing about them and actually being willing to experience them. That I think is true, that took me a very long time to be willing to do that. But I don't think there's anything superficial or about me or that I'm not willing to go deep. Mm. I don't think anyone would say that about me either.
Mm. There's this wonderful Elizabeth Gilbert quote that I come back to over and over. I don't know the exact quote, but it's a passage about her ode to curiosity. Mm. And she talks about how passion is such a terrifying, like, subject. Passion seems like something you would need to, like, shave your head and move across the world for, leave your life behind. But curiosity is so gentle, and it's something that you can just, like, you know, peek behind a door or kind of nudge something aside and just do a little bit of exploring to see what it's like. And I feel that way about being a seven. It doesn't feel so much like the superficial skimming of the surface of different interests, but rather I'm constantly pushing my curiosity through different doors in search of something that I might want to do a deep dive into. Mm-hmm. But in the last year, I have tried running. I've tried making homemade kombucha. I bought a bike. Like, I'm always trying to find the new thing. And it's not because I superficially want to try everything. It's because I'm just like poking around. It feels like I'm on the search for the thing that I will do a deep dive into. It's like an honest search, not this like happy-go-lucky skimming that you're describing, Joel. Mm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I really have any. Superficial just sounds like such a rotten thing to be. because it sounds like it sounds like fake to me, superficial, fake, right? So superficial in terms of breath, yes. Superficial in terms of fake, I can't relate, really.
Well, how would you distinguish between earlier you're saying that I can be perceived as flaky and but you're like no one would say I was superficial. Like how do you differentiate between those two things?
Well, okay, so flaky to me is like you change your mind. You want to do one thing one minute and you maybe don't want to do it the next minute. Whereas superficial is you're not going to get the real, you're not going to get an honest answer from me, or you're not going to get genuine emotion from me, or you're not going to get sincerity from me. And that's not true. I'll be real with you and sincere. And it's just that I'm also real and sincere about 50 other things. Mm. And so it's like almost a matter of attention, maybe. Like my attention is spread in a lot of different places. But they're not, my attention is not fake. I'm not faking those things.
I liked the description of superficial in breadth. That really resonated with me. You know, spread thin, but honest and sincere curiosity and like attention to each of the things that it lands on.
This is a good example of where Joe will protect me. So I will say, oh my gosh, look at that idea. And he will say, what makes that idea different than the third one ago that you tried? And that's a pause for me. And sometimes I'll say, you don't get it. I'll just do it. But sometimes I'll say, oh my gosh, you're so right. Yeah. Like that. So that's a hack that he does for me.
It's really good. Yeah.
And I'll be excited. Oh yeah, I'll be excited. We're going to get that. Oops. We're going to get that. And he's like, we already have this. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. Right. Or well, we tried that before, Eileen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so well said. And I think that the whole thing of curiosity is that can tend, because the curiosity and also the avoidance sometimes of the darker emotions, particularly when we're feeling more anxious, is we can then become more inch deep and a mile wide. And so our work in relationships is that of things like hacks, or like you know, that are helpful to us to say, wait, there's also the deeper part of us that we can sometimes forget. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So last question. How do your loved ones get to know you?
One thing I thought of, because it was hard, but one thing I thought of is they better be watching me closely because I don't tell a lot. Right. So they watch and they see and they observe and they probably make assumptions or come to conclusions, you know, about. So I think they have to watch to figure out how I'm feeling and what I'm thinking because I don't stop long enough to tell anybody. You know, like it's I mean, when I'm anxious or when I was very sick at one point. And I just needed to be dark girl for a day. You know how you said sometime you'll go to people and you'll sit with them and be with them. And one of the reasons that's – it's easy for me once I recognize it, but it's difficult for me to recognize that somebody wants me to sit with them because when I'm dark and I want to have a really bad day, I want to be alone. Mm-hmm. Don't come near me. I don't need your help. I don't want you to encourage me. Oh, yeah. Nothing. Just let me go to my room, shut my door, be miserable. And then next day I'll be fine. So that was a total seven tangent. because the question, I think people, that's how people, even the closest people to me, if they don't say, Mom, what are you thinking? They have to make assumptions and figure it out because I don't stop long enough to say. I'm a little bit better at it now, but not very. And I'm much better at it with my husband and my daughters and Eric than I am even with my next ring. So.
Does that, do you think, have anything to do with the seven being kind of future-minded? So you're going and you're into this thing, but
so much how do you feel or what are you thinking about it is a past test question, and so that's no longer interesting?
I think that's really interesting. So, yes, because that's a really great way to put it, because I do know that when, like when I was really sick that one time or when I have a really bad day, I put my head down and go, and all I'm looking at is where I'm headed. So that's very future. I don't need to acknowledge all of this junk to get where I'm going. Well, that's what I say. Joel has helped me dig into a little bit of that junk so that it's not, you know, walking through life with me. But I do think it's because I'm like, here's the problem and here's where we need to go. And I'm looking at the end. That's definitely like, I don't need to acknowledge all this crap. I'm just going to fix it. And then we don't have to talk about it anymore. Yeah. Not good. But does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's total forward. Yeah.
I feel like my loved ones get to know me better by asking me very pointed questions, which seems really obvious, but I don't know if this is as a seven or just a facet of my personality, but I love to talk about myself. And I think about myself all the time. I think that sevens are pretty self-centered. But because I'm also deeply concerned with my self-image, I would never want people to peg me as selfish and self-centered. I had an ex-boyfriend once tell me I was selfish, and I will literally never let it go. And so this idea that I don't want to be perceived that way follows me. And therefore, if people aren't asking me pointed questions about myself, even though I want to talk about myself and tell people what's going on, I don't want it to be, you know, the Kate show. I don't want it to be me, me, me. So I won't say anything. But if anyone opens the door and is like, so how was your day? I feel like I've now been given the permission to tell all. However coy that sounds. But I love telling what's going on with me. And I don't have many reservations about being honest with someone that I'm having a hard time or being honest about something I'm really proud of that I've accomplished. I just want this space opened up for me to do so and me feel like people really want to receive it without me boring down on them with things about how I'm doing. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
That's awesome.
I just keep thinking if people wanted to get to know me to read what I write, like I feel like that's the place where I'm the least, there's the least amount of junk. I can tell the truth to even to myself, you know, not that I'm outwardly lying or anything. It's just that's the truest me. So reading my words. But obviously that's also not a reality. Like I would never come to my house here. Just read this essay.
Well, you could send it to him as pre-work. Read this before you come over and then we'll be good.
So it's not something that actually is that's not how relationships actually work, but how that would translate in a relationship. I think the watching is a really good insight. Watching what I'm not saying. Mm-hmm. Watching what I'm doing. You know, I can talk all that. I mean, we always have things to say and figuring it out when we're talking and all that. But there's a lot of noise there. So the times I've learned the most about myself from people that love me are when they've made very gentle but astute observations after having watched me for a long time. Like, I've noticed you do this.
I asked that question of you guys, and I'm not even prepared to answer it. It's a tough question for me as well. Like, I think what I've learned in relationship with my wife has been that I need to talk. I need to express my my vulnerable needs because I don't like vulnerability. I don't like being vulnerable. I don't like having any weakness or having people have anything on me. Like I just don't want you having power in any way or control or ability to manipulate me. And so I keep all that and I don't even notice it. It just doesn't come to my attention.
Does anybody like that, though? Does anybody want that?
There are some that prefer to communicate in that language of, here's what's going on emotionally for me.
Yeah.
Here's what's happening on the inside.
Yeah.
I certainly don't. Mm-hmm. And so for me to say, this is what I need, even things like, Joel, do you like this? I can say no, and I'll say no. I'll say, no, I don't like this, right? But if you push and you argue, I just will be like, you know what, I don't care, and I'll back out because I just don't want to do that, right? I've started to actually say, because I'm suggestible as a seven, I can be convinced of a lot of different things if the argument makes sense. But what ends up happening is it's me really functioning out of here and not really paying attention to what I want from my heart. A lot of things I just genuinely don't care about, right? But there are some things that I do, but I've learned to just not even pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. So I've had to tune back in and say, actually, I'm not going to push or fight for this, but here is what I really want. Well, it doesn't make sense. I know that part doesn't make sense. I know that. I'm not going to even try to rationalize it. I'm just telling you, this is my preference. Do you care? And can you hold that? And that has been an extremely mm-hmm. difficult step for me to take, but it's one that has allowed me to be known more by those who love me. But the other things you guys have said are all very true for me as well. It's someone asking me good questions. How are you doing? What was your day like? I'm like you, Kate. You just get me going, man. I'm good to talk about me, but to ask those deeper questions, like, okay, but what else? Because I'm not just my head; I'm also my heart. Mm-hmm. And
that's exactly why I sought out a coach, somebody to ask me those open-ended, good questions.
Mm.
That's exactly why I was seeking out a coach, because I needed somebody to help me unpack some of this. And I say unpack, but, you know, just discover it. And because I go so fast, I don't stop to think and discover and say why. But that's exactly why.
Mm.
And, you know, so and that was really valuable.
Mm. Well, thank you so much. You guys,
it was fun.
Thank you.
Was fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
At the end here, we're going to give a couple coaching tips about for you type sevens. But before we get to that, I wanted to just acknowledge Laura McCallan, who is on this podcast, and encourage you to check out her work at lauramccallan.com. And also, she has a fabulous podcast called Spiritualish. And she has done a ton of work around sobriety, and she has a new book coming out next year called We Are the Luckiest. So please check out her work. The portal to all of our work now is theartofgrowth.org. You can contact Joel about coaching. You can contact me about couples coaching with my wife. And if you haven't done so yet, please leave us a rating on iTunes. It helps people find the show. So Joel, talk to me about coaching tips for the type seven.
Yeah. Well, you know, surprisingly, even though I'm a type seven, this always takes me back a little bit. Every time I get asked, like, what are some things for sevens? And a lot of it is because I'm working on it myself. And I find, you know, if I'm being really aware at any given moment, what I know that I'm struggling with is my own feeling of inadequacy as a seven. And so as I coach other sevens, I'm very aware of where I fall short, you know, and of where I got to keep doing my own work in this space. That was a lot of it when I'm sitting with this panel of sevens and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, they're saying things that I'm, oh, yeah, oh, I just did that yesterday. Like, yeah, I'm running in this area of my life. Yeah, wow. So it is something that is really a challenge and a good one for me. It has caused me to continue to grow coaching other sevens. Sevens, because we are future oriented, because that is almost our starting point, is where our heads are at any given moment. The extra effort for us is coming into the present right here, right now, slowing down enough to do that. And when then we do that, what happens is certain feelings creep up on us, particularly the feeling of anxiety. Which I never understood as being anxiety. I just understood it as being hyperactivity or nervous energy or the need to move. And being aware now of what that is, I can call it that. Like, I know that this is what is happening in this moment is anxiety, and I'm able to tune into it, and it does give me information. Like, oh, yeah, this is – you're anxious because this is an uncomfortable situation you're in right now. So rather than running off to the future, see if you can stay present a little bit longer. And as you do so, the lie of the type, which is, you know, and all types have lies. The lie of our type is if we escape this moment, we'll find nurture somewhere else. We'll find, you know, it'll be in the future. It'll be in our imagination. And it never actually is. One of the tips I give to sevens, particularly in terms of relationship, is see if you can stay present to the person you're with. Because at any given moment, there's going to be something uncomfortable, something perhaps that doesn't grab your interest. And this is kind of embarrassing because as a seven, I'm exposing myself here by saying I can become bored. And I don't like saying that because that makes me look really bad. I can become bored in a relationship. I can become bored in a conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
And then I want to run. I want to leave that space. I'm ashamed to say that I've done that. I've done that many times. So what my work is not to allow the shame to have any sort of impact on me, but to release that and enter into grace, grace for the self. So hold yourself with grace. Yes, that's what I do. And then see if you can then, by habit and by deliberate decision, to say, I'm going to see if I can stay present longer to this person right here, right now. It's uncomfortable. But what happens if you stay present is on the other side, there's this rest and settledness that comes over you. And it's a wonderful sensation. It goes against the anxiety and actually lessens it. So the lie is that if I run into the future, I won't be anxious. I'll be, you know, satiated. Untrue. If you stay present while being unsatiated, feeling a little bit of the anxiety, what happens then is it goes away. And so stay present to your relationships. Listen more than you speak. Ask more questions, not just of your own curiosity, but see if you can tune into the person that's with you. One of the things that sevens really can do, I mean, this is a strength of sevens, is you can be present to people. And when you are, you can really make them feel good. We bring joy. That's one of the things, you know. All types have a gift to relationships. And sevens can tend to bring people up and lift people up. But we're hurrying that process because we don't like the anxiety and the discomfort we feel. So we're trying to lift everybody up. But really what we're trying to do is escape our own discomfort at any given moment. Well, if we stay present to the discomfort – and then we lift people up. Then it's you know, all boats are rising sort of thing at the same time. So this is what my number one tip to sevens is: stay present to relationships just a little bit longer. See if you can, you know, increase that by 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes, and it'll do some remarkable things for you personally, but also for relationships that you're engaged with.
So how about in work relationships?
Yeah. Oh, this has me laughing a lot. This is one of the things that sevens really drive other types crazy in, is that we're all great at starting projects. We're terrible at finishing them. This is a stereotype, not true of all sevens, but it is true of a lot of sevens. We end up starting a lot of projects. We end up having a hard time completing them because of this drive for what is interesting, what is keeping us from boredom, and also keeping the buzz. This is a big thing for sevens, is we have this buzz that we like and we want to keep that going. Finishing projects is really difficult. So one of the important things for sevens is to sort of to understand that you've got to slow down. And if you can stay with the project a little bit longer, it's great if you can start something and have other people pick up on it and complete it. For sure, that's a gift if you're able to do that. And you should probably find jobs in which you don't have to have a whole lot of projects that you're starting and completing on your own. If you can have a team that helps you get there across the finish line, that's great. But you need a team that doesn't just do it for you so that you can go run and start something new.
Right.
That's not the goal, although that feels like, I mean, I used to wish for that.
It sounds like a dream, but it's a dream. Not actually totally. Helpful. To...
No, because the funny thing about your own growth is that while you think that that would be an incredible, that would be heaven for you, it turns out to be its own version of hell. Mm. Because you can't start enough projects to keep the buzz going. Eventually, it catches up to you. And so it's actually slowing down and completing it that gives you that sense of rest and internal peace that you're seeking, that sense of being full on the inside that you're seeking. See if you can get a team that can help you. Well, you're not going to be good at finishing it. If you can stay with the team and walk with them, because we're definitely people-oriented for the most part. We like to have people around us working with us. See if you can stay with the team that can help you get across the finish line together. And it's a together sort of win if you can do that. The other thing is don't come up with, even though you have a lot of ideas, here's a hack for sevens. We're always coming up with ideas. Instead of starting the idea and actually causing frustration to your team, like you just came up with a new idea, a new way to do the thing that you know, 3 months ago you started this, you said, well, we should do this. And then everybody says, oh, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And then you're off to something new, or you come to the team with a new idea and you drive your boss crazy. And if you're the boss, you drive your employees crazy. Is write it down, explore it, see if you can find somebody who understands you and says, can I explore this idea with you, right?
Right.
So it gets the crazies out of you. You get to write it down, record it, because it's gold to you as a seven. And keep it. So I have this window on my computer where I have a lot of the sticky app. I've got a lot of stickies. That's where I put all my crazy ideas. I know eventually I'll get to it, but it satisfies my brain to know that it's not lost.
Yeah.
I've got it, and maybe I'll come back to it, and maybe not. But at least I have it recorded there, and I'm not just chasing something new. Thirdly, I would say, for sevens, find ways to get your crazies out, but not all in one location. So if you've got a lot of energy and a lot of ideas and a lot of ambition, don't put it all into one, you know, your job or onto your team.
Right.
Find other places where you can get that out. And it's great for sevens to have two or three jobs, two or three endeavors in order to keep that energy going without putting that all into a team and, you know, stressing them all out and blowing up the whole entire thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super helpful. So thank you so much for joining us again, and have an amazing week, and we will talk to you next time.